This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkel, the constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Well, there's been a lot of action this week, with President-elect Trump making major strides with his transition team as they prepare for the presidency. And people are still out in the streets protesting, although that seems to be a paying job for some of them. Regardless, President-elect Trump made a few promises during his campaign, one of which was to end Obamacare. This can only be done with the help of Congress. One potential way that Congress is looking at doing that is through budget reconciliation. Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana is the current House Majority Whip, and he joined Tony on Monday to discuss the possibilities.
Steve, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be back with you, and especially when you think about this time in our nation's history and what opportunities we have ahead of us, especially in the first 100 days of President Trump's administration.
Yes, you and I have had a number of conversations, there could not have been a sharper contrast between the two potential outcomes. And this outcome allows us to advance with some really good policy initiatives. And of course, Donald Trump ran on the issue of abolishing Obamacare, repealing Obamacare. What can we expect to see Congress do to set the stage for that?
Well, you know, you and I worked real closely last year on a bill that we were able to put on the president's desk to gut the law, to gut Obamacare and defund Planned Parenthood. And I'd like to see us move that same bill again and ideally get it to his desk in those first days of his new presidency, where instead of Barack Obama, who vetoed that bill, we will finally have a president. And I've asked him directly about this. He would sign this bill.
Now, you're speaking about what's called the budget reconciliation bill. Congress gets to do one bill like that a year that allows the measure. It's a funding measure. As you pointed out, it doesn't completely repeal Obamacare. It guts it because it uses a procedure which only requires a majority vote in the Senate versus the 60 votes. What's the timing that could take place?
Well, you know, we're talking to the transition team now about all the things that we're going to be able to do in those first 100 days, and clearly the focus is going to be getting the economy back on track. But as Donald Trump himself said as recently as yesterday, Obamacare is one of the biggest things holding our economy back. And so I want to repeal the law completely, as I've voted probably over 60 times to do. We've passed a bill to completely repeal it, and the Senate can't get it through with 60 votes, but there are a lot of things you could do with 51 votes in the Senate. And I want to do as much as we can to get rid of that law and replace it with reforms that actually put patients back in charge of their health care decisions and focus on lowering costs. And of course, in Obamacare, nationally, you're seeing 25% increases next year in premiums. I know in our state of Louisiana, 30% more is what people are going to be paying for health care with fewer choices. So the law's broken. It's not working. And finally, we have a president coming in who agrees with us and wants to work to dismantle it, and then go and put real reforms back in place that actually focus on lowering costs, increasing access, and fixing the problems that exist.
So what we see how this unfolding in a reconciliation bill, primarily it guts Obamacare, but this is going to be phased in such a way that there can be a replacement, because there's some folks that were forced by the government to be dependent upon this health care. And, of course, I don't think Congress wants to leave them hanging, nor does the Trump administration. So there's got to be some bridge in order to give time for a replacement to come in. Is that correct?
Right, absolutely. And look, nobody's going to be thrown out on the street. I mean, under Obamacare, millions of people don't have health care today. And, in fact, millions of people who had good health care and were promised by Obama, if you like what you have, you can keep it, they were lied to. And millions of those people lost the good health care they had. So they were thrown out on the street by Obamacare. By coming back with not only a bill that guts the law, but then setting up a mechanism where now we replace it with the reforms where people can get back the good health care they had or find even better options. If you're in the state of Ohio and you find a good plan that you can buy in Florida, you should be able to buy that plan. That should be your choice, not the government's choice. And so we get the IRS and all these other bureaucrats out of that decision, that relationship between you and your doctor, and you dramatically lower cost because you get rid of all these mandates that are not only unworkable, but jack up the cost of the health care that people have to buy, or else they're fined by their own government.
Right, and you get these borders, you remove the borders where people can, the larger pools, people can go across state lines, as you mentioned. Congressman Scalise, almost out of time, a final question here. I want to manage people's expectations when we talk about the Republicans having the House and the Senate. The Republicans actually lost two seats as of right now in the Senate, so they still have to work with that 60-vote threshold, so there's still going to be a challenge going forward. That's why reconciliation appears to be the best path on Obamacare and defunding of Planned Parenthood.
That's right. The more we can do through the budget reconciliation process, which, of course, we can pass anything we want to get the economy moving again to address all these problems in the House, but as long as the Senate keeps that 60-vote rule, and I'd sure like to see them change it at a minimum on appropriations bills to go to 51, but as long as 60 is the requirement, it does limit what they can do. But with budget reconciliation, as you point out, there are a lot of things you can do, but you only have one opportunity. And because there wasn't a budget done in the current year, we can actually do one early next year and in the middle of next year, so we can create two opportunities to have budget reconciliation on a President Trump's desk with 51 votes in that first year. And so that's something else that we're working with them on, and again, provides us more opportunities to go and start dismantling some of the radical Obama agenda in the first year.
All right. House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon.
Thanks. Excited about the opportunity. Looking forward to working with you next year, Tony.
You can find out more about Congressman Scalise when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, our own David Christensen will be here. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Tony Perkins here, inviting you to join my wife, LaJuana, and me on an exciting adventure. Next July 29th, we'll board Holland America's luxurious MS Uridam for a seven-day cruise to Alaska. You'll fellowship and worship with other believers in the midst of some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to TonyPerkins.com. Again, that is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. As of this past Tuesday, President Obama has issued nearly 200 executive orders, and alongside them in the Federal Register are 198 presidential memoranda, all of which carry the same legal force as executive orders. Many see this as a gross abuse of executive power in order to circumvent Congress. President-elect Trump has pledged to reverse those orders. On Wednesday of this week, FRC's Vice President of Government Affairs, David Christensen, joined Tony to talk about those executive orders.
President-elect Donald Trump has said he's going to reverse these, but before we get into that and what he may or may not do with these executive orders, let's talk a little bit about the subject matter of these executive orders.
Well, a lot of the executive orders, some of them are just directing agencies to, adhere to certain laws that are already on the books, the changes in policy that the administration has discretion. President Obama has taken it to an entirely new level, frankly, some would say lawless level, where he's legislating from the executive branch. We've, heard complaints about EPA, executive orders related to EPA, amnesty, couldn't get through certain immigration laws through Congress, and he decided just to pick up the pen and write an executive order, and of course that's being challenged. On our issues, the issues of values, faith, family, freedom, there's a number of executive orders that he's issued, everything from, a sham executive order actually trying to provide cover on Obamacare as it relates to abortion funding, to executive orders. He rescinded the Mexico City policy that was preventing federal funds for abortion overseas. And then there's a whole host of agency actions, regulations related to conscience protections, redefining current laws on conscience as it relates to pro-life healthcare entities. One of the really troubling areas of executive action has been to redefine sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity. So where the laws under Title IX say that, you know, schools, et cetera, cannot engage in sex discrimination, originally designed to protect women from discrimination, now the administration's redefining that to include the LGBT agenda. It's not on the books. It's not in the law. But he's just creating these whole cloth and obviously fit for his political agenda. So now there's threat for healthcare providers that are federally regulated to engage in hormone therapy or sex change operations against their conscience. Schools regarding bathrooms and showers, you know, allowing biological boys in women's restrooms and showers. It's
all by executive order.
Executive order agency. He just tells the agency to put something out. They put it out, and there's no legal basis for much of this.
And that can be undone by President-elect Trump once he's in office.
Absolutely. The President-elect Trump can rescind those executive orders. They can direct the agencies to rescind regulations that have been promulgated. I mean, remember the whole Hobby Lobby case, the HHS mandate that led to the win in Hobby Lobby, but the ongoing litigation regarding the Little Sisters of the Poor, mandating that the Little Sisters who help, you know, their charity of nuns to pay for contraceptives, including abortifacient drugs. It's insane. But that's the way this administration has worked.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday afternoon. David Christensen, Vice President of Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. We're discussing executive orders by President Obama, about 200 of them. And there's other ones, like, for instance, he undid George Bush's certification of UNFPA's involvement in China's forced abortion campaign, basically saying we're not going to fund the UNFPA, the United Nations Family Planning. We're not going to give them money because they're a part of this forced abortion, you know, one-child policy in China. President Obama reversed that.
Yeah, this is astonishing. I remember when he reversed this in 2009. Hillary Clinton went to China in 2009 to, you know, said that economic rights trump human rights. She was right. So UNFPA funds China's family planning program, wherein women and families, married couples, are not allowed to have more than one child. That's been changed now to two children.
So indirectly, it's United States taxpayer money going to fund that one-child
right.
policy in China.
Yeah. Women, people are fined if they have more than one kid. In some cases, they're forced to engage, have an abortion. Imagine a woman who's being held down and forced.
And we have this epidemic of abandoned children in China, too, because parents, they get a baby girl and they just get rid of it.
Right, because they want to have a boy and they can't have more than one child, so they get rid of the girl and then, you know, they want to have a boy because of gender selection
right.
issues. So this administration has been, we've been funding the UNFPA, which basically works hand in glove with China's coercive policies. It's an abuse that we shouldn't even be remotely engaged in.
I mean, the list is quite extensive of the executive orders, and most of these are issues which the president would not have been successful in going through Congress. He would have not been able to get these measures through Congress.
There's no way. I mean, look, if he had wanted to get it through Congress, he had the first 2 years of the administration where you had a Democrat-controlled House and a Democrat-controlled Senate. They didn't do it through Congress then. And obviously, the Republicans took over the House in 2010. The administration has just over the last 8 years been just unloading executive order, regulation, guidance documents, legal interpretations. They legalized internet gambling just by a Department of Justice letter, a memo saying, well, we're going to reinterpret the Wire Act, which you know, was supposed to ban internet gambling. So all kinds of things people...
Well, like we worked during the Bush administration to prohibit the funding of embryo destruction through stem cell research.
Right.
But by executive order, Barack Obama put that back in place.
That's right. They rescinded Bush's policies. They decided instead of putting money to ethical and effective treatments, regenerative medicine that were proving to... help patients with Parkinson's, with spinal cord injury, with heart disease, you name it. They turn money and a lot of that money back to embryonic stem cell research that destroys human embryos. Hasn't treated anybody.
Finally, we're up against a break, but I mean, he had memorandums directing U.S. diplomats to promote the LGBT agenda.
Right.
I mean, he was using his office to tell people to do this stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you have a country like Kenya, you have other countries that have human rights issues that they're struggling with in the context of ISIS, terrorism, Nigeria. And the diplomats are showing up and talking about LGBT rights rather than fundamental human rights to protect the lives of people. And they don't want to pass a directive calling out genocide when it is genocide.
It's incredible what the president has been doing with his pen. But as I said, we may find out if that's erasable ink, because Donald Trump will have the opportunity to rescind those. David Christensen, thanks so much for joining us.
To find out more about the breadth of President Obama's use of the executive order, go to TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, the general rides to the rescue. Don't go away. There's more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Tony Perkins here, inviting you to join my wife, LaJuana, and me on an exciting adventure. Next July 29th, we'll board Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam for a 7-day cruise to Alaska. You'll fellowship and worship with other believers in the midst of some of the most breathtaking beauty in all of God's creation. For more information or to book your Alaskan adventure, call 844-872-5155 or go to TonyPerkins.com. Again, that is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. President-elect Trump's team is in the process of putting together his administration. One name that is circulating for potential Secretary of State is Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee. This selection could prove to be problematic due to Senator Corker's past performance in Washington, D.C. Corker played a key role in setting the stage for Obama and his crew to produce the careless Iran nuclear deal. Senator Corker's bad judgment has a lot of national security people concerned that he would display a similar performance as Secretary of State. FRC's executive director and founder of the Army's Delta Force, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, talked about that issue with Tony on Wednesday.
General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
You're becoming a regular here on the program.
I know.
Yeah.
Would you care to find anybody else?
I know. That's what happens when you've got an office next to mine. Let's talk about Bob Corker, his role in basically bringing about what we have with this horrible Iran nuclear deal.
Yeah. Tony, let me read something to our audience here. Article 2, Section 2, Paragraph 2 of the United States Constitution. It says the president shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, providing 2/3 of the senators present concur. That's in our Constitution. In other words, the president has the authority to make that treaty, but he has to have 2/3 of the senators concur with it. What Corker did, along with Senator Cardin out of Illinois, was he usurped the authority of the Constitution with the Corker-Cardin Amendment, because what that said was that before this deal could go forward, that they had to have the consent of the Senate, and the vote was 98-1. So you ask yourself, since it's already in the Constitution, why would you come up with an amendment like that that simply says that the president has to do what the Constitution already calls for? So either these two guys didn't know what's in the Constitution, which is highly unlikely, or they are part of this process of degrading the provisions of our Constitution. Either way, it gives me great concern for him being the Secretary of State when we've seen this kind of behavior in the past. And this thing, I want everybody to understand, this is not a treaty. What the president did was he called it a diplomatic agreement. And anybody that thinks the Iranians have ever signed anything are wrong. The Iranians have never signed anything that binds them to this. It's just a diplomatic agreement. But we lifted sanctions. We gave them $1.5 billion, about $1.7 billion, $450 million in cash in exchange for hostages there. So what Senator Corker has done here, I think, is a clear indication of what we could expect from him as a Secretary of State.
General, let me ask you this question. Had that Corker measure not passed, do you think we would have what we have today?
No,
did
I
that
think,
provide cover?
Well, yeah, it provided them cover for that. But I think that they would have drawn this thing out much longer and given more time for a review of what this was all about and more discussion about what we were going to expect of them and how this thing should actually be cobbled together.
I mean,
as a result of 98-1 voting
right.
for it, in fact, our good friend Ted Cruz voted for it. The only one that didn't vote for it was Tom Cotton.
But it's also a little puzzling to me that he was not a strong Trump supporter early mm-hmm. on. And one thing I found about Trump that is I have to admire, okay, because it's something that I like. He's very loyal to people. Mm-hmm. People who are loyal to him, he's loyal to them. And but he's also, you know, forgiving, and he's welcomed other people back into the fold. But these are top spots where I would think you want somebody who's loyal mm-hmm. In a top post in your cabinet.
Yes, Tony, and I think we need to understand our status in the world today. For the most part, our allies don't trust us and our enemies don't fear us. And that is largely a result of a very feckless foreign policy. We've turned our backs on our allies. You and I were talking about it earlier this morning. Is after negotiating treaties for Arab missile defense systems in the Czech Republic and Poland for 3 years, and they finally agreed to it, and then George W. Bush left and Barack Obama came in and canceled
right.
those treaties
right.
with our NATO allies. That leaves us in a position where people ask, can we really be trusted? Japan and Korea have the same issue. And, of course, the Russians, because of our foreign policy, are exploiting every opportunity. They're exploiting the current situation. So you want a Secretary of State that's going to come in understanding that his first obligation is to the Constitution of the United States.
Right.
And in executing his duties, he has to follow the orders of the president, at the same time giving advice and counsel, but he has to follow the orders of the president. And I think this president has made it clear he wants to get rid of this Iran deal and roll back the clock on this.
It just doesn't make sense to have somebody who facilitated it actually being there at the
right.
Secretary of State. I mean, the other names that are out there that I think would be good to have some value. Rudy Giuliani. Now, some originally thought maybe he would be at Department of Justice. Now, I will tell you, every time I saw Donald Trump since the, I don't know, going back quite a ways in this election cycle, Rudy Giuliani was with him. I mean,
right.
he has traveled with him. He has campaigned right. hard for him. He's been with him. And he's known for 9/11 and for cleaning up New York. So he's kind of no nonsense. To me, figures maybe he would be better as Attorney General, but I think there's some other people being considered for that spot. But I think he sends a tough signal as Secretary of State. Tom Bolton, another one, former
John Bolton.
John Bolton, I mean, he was UN ambassador or served in that capacity. He would be a good pick as Secretary of State.
Well, I think, first of all, Giuliani is a utility player.
Yeah.
Where do you need
leadership? Well, you got the loyalty there. I mean, he's
That's right.
definitely loyal to Donald Trump.
Right.
Now, I've not agreed with him on all issues. And,
no.
You know, and on his domestic issues, I've never agreed with him, but I have a relationship with him. I think I admire him for his leadership that he put forth
right.
in New York. He certainly cleaned up New York as mayor.
Right.
It's kind of slipped backwards.
Yep.
But he's got that no-nonsense leadership style.
Well, look, you could put – I mean, a guy like Giuliani, given his background and his experience both in government and out of government, he's had a pretty significant background since he got out of government. You could put him at the CIA. I mean, you know, think about it.
Yeah, he could go
almost
anywhere.
Bill Casey under Ronald Reagan, you know.
Yeah.
You could put him in a number of places, but I certainly would not be apprehensive about him being the Secretary of State. So I think that – and John Bolton, people talk about John Bolton being too radical, that he has threatened to bomb Iran. You know, I think people need to put all that stuff in perspective and understand. John Bolton is an experienced diplomat that is probably one of the most cognitive people that you will see in terms of diplomacy.
Well, I mean, look, when you get somebody like that, and Giuliani's kind of in the same category, that has spent so much time in the media.
Yeah.
I mean, John Bolton is, I don't know, I mean, he's on almost every day, has been. Anytime there's a national security issue or a foreign policy issue, he's on talking about it. He does it well. And, you know, I know this from doing media now for almost 20 years. I mean, if you're out there every day under the lights, in the pressure, if you don't know what you're doing, eventually you're going to say something that doesn't come across. And he's not done that. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. I think think he would be a good pick too.
Well, and I go back and say, I think that the choice for Secretary of State has to send a very strong message to both our friends and our enemies. And we have to assure and reassure our friends that we're going to be faithful allies. And we have to let our enemies know that we're not going to put up with nonsense. We're not going to go into treaties like we did with Iran, which gave us nothing and gave them everything. And we're not going to allow you to run your ships up close to ours or buzz your airplanes close to ours. And I'm not advocating for war, but I am advocating for reestablishing America's status in the world. And the Secretary of State will be the first message that's sent to the world.
Well, it was Ronald Reagan's policy, peace through strength.
That's right.
You don't have to use it.
That's right.
And, you know, that's why you work out every day, so you know, you don't have to use.
Are we going to go down this road again now? I work out.
All right, I'll let you go to the gym there and get your workout in this afternoon there, General.
Now I'm so upset, I've got to go find a safe space. And
that's right. Look, we got some of those, we got a petting zoo in the back there for the therapy.
That's where I'm headed right now.
All right.
You can check out the great work that General Boykin is doing at FRC by heading over to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for a special Thanksgiving weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.